Hey there, folks. This is Grit and Glitter, a weekly podcast dedicated to the power of women's wrestling. My name is Harley Vasquez.
I'm Em Fear.
This week on the show, we are presenting the ninth installment in our series, Living Legends. This is where we do deep dive biographical episodes covering the lives and careers of some of the great wrestlers of marginalized gender who are still around, who are still out there today waiting for us to help deliver that truckload of flowers to their house. We've covered people like Dark Sheik, Veda Scott, Mercedes Martinez, Madison Eagles on the past episodes of Living Legend. This week, we turn our attention to Chikara royalty. And to that extent, we're joined by a very special guest, somewhat of Chikara, maybe not royalty, but Chikara alumni, for sure. I'm hoping, current and still enjoy champion. I don't know. I was in there last night. No spoilers. One thing I will say that we do know to be a fact, your favorite wrestler for 3 years in a row, Glitterbomb award winning, top of the heap, best of the best, your fave and ours, Iya Surreal.
Hi! Oh my gosh, what an intro. Thank you so much. I'm so excited to do this. Thank you for having me.
Yes, we obviously are so excited to have you. Em, we know right away, we got to be on our best behavior because we know this is going to be the most downloaded episode we do all year.
Oh my gosh, that's too much pressure.
It's true. Like, anytime we have anything that focuses on you, Edie, like, we immediately, like, see a bump in listenership, but also, like, our Living Legends episodes tend to be a good place for people to jump into this podcast for whatever reason, because it's, you know, it doesn't require like up-to-date knowledge on what's happening on in anything right now with wrestling. So it's a good place to jump in. So those two powers combined, I have to be on my A game, friends. And I don't know if I've got it in me. It's daylight. We're recording this on like daylight savings time day, and I've lost an hour and I don't know where I am anymore.
This is Living Legend, the life and career of Kimberly. Tell us a little bit about Kimberly, why you agreed to come on this episode, what Kimberly means to you as a friend, as a fan, as all those things.
Yeah, I mean, my first introduction to Kim was I was a fan in the audience at Top Banana when she won the Chikara Grand Championship. And that was just, that was like such a special moment for me as a fan, and kind of was one of the pieces that inspired me to want to become a wrestler. You know, I just so vividly remember there was like a little girl, like maybe 3 or 4 years old, in a little princess dress, watching Princess Kimberly, you know, defeat the evil Hollow Wicked to win the grand championship. And it was just like this incredible moment of like the power of professional wrestling. And, you know, that's always meant a lot to me and always has helped inspired me in the ring. And when I'm trying to create moments as a wrestler, I always come back to that, of just how special that connection is with your audience. And I'm just always inspired by that. And, you know, I got to know her a lot through her time in Chikara and her time in Beyond Wrestling. So yeah, I'm really excited to do this episode.
As we always do here on Living Legend, let's start at the very beginning. Kimberly Ann Frank Kelly is born June 1990 in Seattle, Washington. She's a ballerina from a young age, and she grows up as a kid dreaming of being in Swan Lake. But she emphasizes that she's not your traditional girly girl. She says, "I was the one who collected spiders and kept them in my desk." As a teenager, she discovers wrestling through some friends, but her mom won't allow her to watch it. She considers it unladylike. And that makes sense. It's like the early 2000s. I think we all remember what WWE was like, 2005, 2006. It was definitively unladylike. She finds this wrestling fandom, and she gets into it from an early age, even if she has to watch in a secret. China is an early inspiration for her, and that fuels a love for intergender wrestling. After high school, she goes to Philadelphia to attend the University of the Arts, and she does eventually graduate with a fine arts degree in dance. And it's while being in Philly that she discovers the local indie scene, which leads her to enrolling at the Combat Zone Wrestling Academy, the CZW Academy. She is part of the same class as Adam Cole and Joe Gacy, and she trains under Drew Gulak. Gulak was actually, she says, I was the first female he ever trained. I'm really kind of his first student, period, that was ever just his. And he says about her years later, Kim is very much in love with the performance of wrestling. She has a very good understanding of the fundamentals. She's more substance than Flash, and Flash has been in vogue on the indies for the past decade or so. She understands how to wrestle against a variety of different styles and let the storytelling develop. She's always been very driven that way. Edie, you're well acquainted with Drew Gulak. You trained under him as well for a period, right?
I did, yeah. I trained with him at the Chikara Wrestle Factory for a little bit.
So what can you speak to about his training style? Because those of us who know him from an in-ring perspective, who have seen him in WWE or in the Cruiserweight Classic, other areas, Chikara, beyond, he's very much an old-school mat technician.
Yes, yeah. He's a great trainer. I only took a handful of like classes with him, but I learned so much from those sessions. He's very, very intense. You know, you're very not on edge, but it's just he's very intense. He's very serious. You are giving it your all through those sessions. And he has, you know, a methodology and like, you know, a belief that wrestling should look very, very authentic and look very, very real, but still be very safe. But, you know, that intensity is always there. And, you know, coming from Chikara, where things could be a little bit more, you know, training with Mike Quackenbush, for example, is very more like British catch wrestling and more fancy ways to get into a wrist lock. Maybe you do a little roll to get into it or something like that, versus when Drew would do it, you grab that arm and you snatch it down and you don't do anything extra. You just get right to the bare essentials of the hold. So yeah, he's very intense.
So this is the atmosphere that Kimberly is being formed in. It's 2010, I want to say. Yeah, about 2010, 2011, she's 20, 21. That's her teacher, is the Drew Gulak that Edie just described. Her school is the CZW Academy, which is, following the footsteps of ECW. Very macho, very violent in a lot of ways. But she's coming from this ballet background, and she finds ways to incorporate that. And she says that her dance background helps her add a certain elegance to her moves. She's already acquainted with stamina and remembering choreography sequences from her time doing ballet.
Yeah, I think that I definitely know, like, that's a huge advantage to a lot of wrestlers who have different performing arts backgrounds. Like, it makes me think of, like, Vita Von Starr, who does a lot of, like, circus arts and stuff like that. She does like the silk ropes and stuff like that, and that's such a huge element to what makes her like a special performer. So the same thing with Kim, like all the elements of dance that she learned are incorporated all through her wrestling style, and that's a huge advantage to her.
So 2011, age 21, she becomes the first woman to graduate from the CZW Academy. And she debuts under the name Kimber Lee. Two words, one name. This is always interesting. It's a rare situation that we found where somebody has the same name their entire career from day one. That's very unusual. But it's Kimber Lee right from the start. Her first match is May 27th, 2011 for NWA. she takes on Casey Carlisle, and she continues to get her baby steps in throughout the summer of 2011. She wrestles Mia Yim, she wrestles for a couple of different indie promotions before finally debuting for CZW that October. October 2011, she takes on Austin Uzzi in her CZW debut, and she spends the next year or so wrestling for CZW almost exclusively. Now, they don't have a lot of women in the promotion. As I said, Kimber was the first female graduate of the CZW Academy. So she finds herself mixing up a lot with Nevaeh and Mia Yim. Those are sort of her two main foes of this time period. That's why the first match I chose for our playlist was CZW February 2012, Kimberly versus Nevaeh, because we always love to find an early match from somebody's career and try to see if we can see the wrestler that will come. What is here in this 2012 Kimberly match that we come to know and love in future Kimberly?
I hate to put it this way because with these wrestlers, I would hate to underestimate either of them, but I was a little surprised at how long it went and how good it was, like how tight and like well done it was, just based on it being CZW, because I didn't really know what to expect, given what we know about the promotion.
Well, and given what we know about women's independent wrestling in 2012,
Yeah.
This is still the Divas era in WWE. We haven't had the women's revolution in NXT yet. And this is a mostly male promotion, CZW. It's February of 2012. So yeah, my expectations were somewhat low as well. But I thought this was great. Like, it's a hard-hitting match. They're both going all out. They're hitting a number of moves. It's not just, you know, drop kicks and clotheslines. Like, there's a lot of variety. And there's nothing sexy about it. There's no catfight aspect to it, even a little bit. It's just two wrestlers wrestling.
Yeah, and their presentation isn't sexy either. Like, neither wrestler, I mean, they're not, like, unattractive, and they're not, like, completely covered up, but they're not, like, presented sexily. The commentary does do the thing of, like, time for the ladies, and isn't it nice to have a break from that guy? We can watch, this is our, like, treat after having to deal with that guy. Like, that sucks, but also it's not like overly lascivious. It didn't like go too far in that realm, which I was like grateful for. Like, we're not talking about, like, I don't know, melons or whatever Jerry Lawler called them, puppies. It doesn't get that degrading. It's kind of just that like obvious indie, like male driven of the time, like that's the type of commentary we're getting for this women's match. Everything else is great. Like, it's good. It's a really solid match. Nevaeh pulls out a win that is with a really credible... What does she do? She gets her in some kind of...
German suplex out of the corner.
Yeah. Yeah. I couldn't remember if it was a German suplex or not. Yeah. Really clean, really nice looking German suplex. And yeah, it's a just front to start to finish. Really good match.
Yeah. Nevaeh picks up the win in 5 minutes, 28 seconds, which, you know, on paper might sound short by our 2024 standards. But it's actually only 1 second shorter than the 8 Diva take match that WWE delivered on pay-per-view a couple weeks before this. So for the time period, that's right there in the typical time slot.
Yeah, I mean, I had like almost no expectation for this match as far as just more of my curiosity and knowing what I know about CZW at the time and at any time. I wouldn't have been surprised to see this kind of relegated to like a 2.5 or 3 minute match. So the fact that it went as hard as it did and was a little over 5 minutes, I was totally satisfied by that. And it's a really nice introduction to Kimber because I feel like you see a very quick evolution in her style that doesn't really change, but becomes a little bit stronger and more assured the more you see her do intergender work. So it's exciting to talk about some of the matches and some of her work like later on in her career, because I think she does become, the more and more she does intergender work for like audiences, the better wrestler I think you see her become, the stronger, the more like confident wrestler you see it like showcased.
Summer 2012, Kimber's been getting her feet wet in CZW for about 8-10 months now. Meanwhile, Drew Gulak has formed the Campaign for a Better Combat Zone, where he started crusading against the violence and all the ethical issues in CZW, particularly going after convicted bank robber Nick Gage. To further his cause, Gulak recruits Alexander James as his new intern and Kimberly as his women's rights activist. Kimber joins up with the Campaign for a Better Combat Zone, and they continue to be like one of the principal heel groups in CZW for the next 2 years. Her time in CZW comes to an end fall 2014. It's a mixed bag, as you would expect in wrestling. The pros: she gets to go on a tour of Europe with CZW. She's the first woman to tour Europe with them. They do shows in Germany and the UK, which is great, right? You get to see the world. Unfortunately, CZW promoter DJ Hyde has been just a bona fide creep since day one, and many people will agree with that assessment. For years, he's been saying things like, I wouldn't hire anyone I wouldn't have sex with. And on the European dates, he specifically assigns her to room with him at the hotels that he books. Now, Drew Gulak and a handful of other people know that this is fishy. They don't like this. So they work to protect her. They end up switching rooms, taking care of her. But coincidence or not, that ends up being her final dates for CZW, that European tour. She never wrestles for them again. Her second big promotion is WSU, Women Superstars Uncensored. She debuts for them spring 2012. They're a New Jersey promotion, and at this time in spring of 2012, they've recently changed hands. So they're now under the ownership of Beyond Wrestling promoter Drew Cordero. Drew's running WSU now, and Kimber enters the 6th annual J-Cup tournament. This is a big tournament that they've been doing for a while. She loses to Athena in the first round, but it's a chance to get her name known in a new area. Also in WSU, she starts teaming with Annie Social as Chicks Using Nasty Tactics, or CUNT. Again, this is 2012. Kimber and Annie take the WSU tag titles from Jessica Havoc and Sassy Steffi. They hold them for 5 months. They lose them. They win them back. They hold them a second time for almost a year. And one of the big things that happens for her in WSU is the King and Queen of the Ring tournament. This is an annual tournament where every pairing is a mixed gender pairing. She teams up with her teacher friend Drew Gulak to compete in the tournament. They make it to the finals of the 8th tournament 2013 before losing to Athena and AR Fox. And then they enter 2014 again, but they lose to Candice LeRae and Redacted. Her next big promotion is Shimmer Women Athletes. The legend, Shimmer. Evie, did you ever get a chance to wrestle for Shimmer before they shut down?
No. I wanted to. I was... You know, I had some people trying to help me get in, but it just never worked out. You know, if they ever come back, it's a huge goal to work there. But no, never had the chance.
You had to have been on their short list.
I hope so.
Shimmer was it for that period of time in the late 2000s, the early 2010s. Like you talk women's wrestling outside of Japan and you're talking about Shimmer more than WWE, even more than the Knockouts division. It's the place to be.
Yeah, I mean, well, think about how many living legends we've done that have come back to Shimmer over and over again. Like, a fair amount of them have been very Shimmer focused. I mean, how much time do we spend on Shimmer in our last living legend when we talked about Madison Eagles? Like, it over and over again, we come back to Shimmer being the place where when we talk about working legends in the business, and especially if they are, you know, American or U.S. based or Canada based, like we are talking about Shimmer. We're talking about that in women's wrestling.
April 2013, Kimber makes her Shimmer debut at Volume 53. It's her teaming up with Canadian wrestler Cherry Bomb to take on Veda Scott and Shazza McKenzie. They fail to win that match, though. And Kimber spends most of 2013 and 2014 chasing success in Shimmer. She hits a lot of big matches. She rarely wins. She loses to people like Dakota Kai, Athena, Asuka, Hikaru Shida, you know, a who's who of future legends. It's not until she starts teaming with Cherry Bomb regularly as the Kimber Bombs that things start to pick up for them. First in Shine. They head down to Florida, they're wrestling for Shine Wrestling, which is Shimmer's sister promotion, and there they enter a tournament to crown the first Shine Take champions. They lose to her old friend Mia Yim and Labor Bates in the first round, but they will eventually win the title, Take titles, a year later. And while they're the Shine Take champions, they manage to win the Shimmer Take titles as well. They hold the Shimmer Take titles for a year before losing them to Dakota Kai and Ruby Soho in a four-corner elimination match. They hang on to the Shine Take titles, but when Cherry Bomb suffers a shoulder injury, she's forced to vacate the titles. That's kind of the extent of Kimber's early Shimmer run here. We'll come back to Shimmer later on, because the early tenure in Shimmer is sort of defined by not being able to win many singles matches, having a moderate success in Take titles, but really coming up short in the big singles competitions, which is interesting because when she arrives in Beyond Wrestling, it's the complete opposite. November 2013, she arrives in Beyond Wrestling for the Tournament for Tomorrow 2. She picks up a win over Allison Kay, but she loses to her boyfriend JT Dunn in the semifinals. As I said, Beyond and Shimmer, two totally different stories. Shimmer, she's on a losing streak, she's struggling to win. Beyond, she enters, and she's just an ass kicker from day one. She goes like on a long undefeated streak. Summer of 2014, she beats in a row Chuck Taylor, LSG, Drew Gulak, Tracy Williams, Mike Bennett. That's a murderer's row right there. That's how you build a resume. And then she goes viral for maybe a good reason, maybe not a good reason. It's Beyond King of Arts, March 2015. Kimberly versus Chris Dickinson in a no disqualification match. The opening match of the night is Chris Dickinson and his team, Team Pazuzu, winning an eight-man tag. They're the top heels in the promotion at the time. So at the end of the night, after the scheduled main event, Dickinson comes out and cuts a promo about how they didn't get the kudos that they should have at the start of the night. Everybody in the crowd should be worshiping him. And they're interrupted by Kimber. Kimber comes out, challenges Dickinson to a no DQ match on the spot, and stunners everybody else in Team Pazuzu, taking them out of action. The bell rings, we get Chris and Kimber fighting. They're fighting in street clothes, and they're going at each other. They're going hard on this one. He rips her shirt off and starts chopping her. She rips his shorts off and starts choking him with them. And then we bring a steel chair into the ring, and she nails him with an unprotected chair shot to the head, which he returns a couple minutes later. And then gives her a Pazuzu bomb into the corner. I'm not well versed enough in Chris Dickinson to know how's the Pazuzu bomb supposed to be delivered. Are you supposed to be hitting the turnbuckle with the back of your head? Is that the idea?
I don't know exactly. It's hard to tell, like, if that was the intent here. I don't think it was. You know, it just looks like, you know, it's always spectacular for, you know, a big, strong wrestler to throw someone corner to corner. That's the longest distance in the ring. And that's always, if you can do it, like, that's what's spectacular. So it, to me, when I watch it, it feels like he was aiming for almost the corner, but in a safe way, and overshot it a little bit or a lot of it and got very, very close to the turnbuckle.
That's kind of, in it too, it's just like the power, the momentum was a little bit bigger than it was supposed to be.
Yeah, I think what happens a lot is if you're wrestling someone of, you know, someone who maybe, like, he's used to giving that to bigger guys, so maybe he's expecting, you know, the muscle memory is a certain way, and Kim is lighter than they are, and I don't know. I know I wasn't there, but that's something I see happen.
It almost looks like her head hits the bottom rope on the way down. That's what seems scary to me, although I couldn't tell or not if it did. The full match is available on video on demand from SmartMark. It's not available on IWTV or YouTube, which is kind of unusual for Beyond because they make so much of their full shows available on these platforms.
But they have, like, the clip from four different angles on YouTube.
Yes, it's a real, the it's a real sensationalist kind of YouTube clip where it's just the ending of the match and they show it from like three different angles, which is really, it's an interesting YouTube clip because it really does feel sensationalized.
Yeah, but I mean, it's also like, it's a viral moment and you have to take advantage of it. So I can't fault them for that.
Yeah, I mean, if people are going to debate, if people are going to like, if it's going to go viral because people are debating it, it makes total sense to kind of feed that fire a little bit and be like, okay, well, here's more footage of that specific moment for you to like hem and haw over.
And especially like, I mean, she wasn't hurt, you know, if it was an actual injury and they were showing that a lot, that's a totally different story. But, you know, at the end of the day, she was not hurt on it. It was a close call, but, you know, she was fine.
Yeah, it's 9 years later, and we're still getting kind of mixed signals or different stories from different people as to whether this was all, whether it went exactly as they wanted it to, whether there was a little bit of a slip up, but everything turned out okay. Fans live in the arena say that she was immediately checked on by referees. She got ice put on the forehead. She was carried out to the parking lot. How much of that is a work remains unclear. Because Kimber says in an interview later on, I was 100% fine. Neither of us had any idea it would go viral. We got to the back and it's, oh my gosh, that was amazing. Thank you for taking care of me. They're not expecting any of the backlash they get. In fact, they wanted to do a top rope powerbomb, but it took Drew Cordero stepping in and saying, no, you're not doing that. That's too dangerous. The end result, though, whether the fans, the people who watched the video got worked or not, the result is the match goes viral. People are calling it horrifying. They're calling it embarrassing. Angry viewers call the venue. They call the city of Providence to complain. Dickinson loses bookings. He gets death threats over this clip going viral. Lufisto, number one queen of intergender wrestling, writes a guest column for Canada's Slam Wrestling. She says, if Kimberly decided that she wanted to take the shots, she's a grown woman. She knows what she's doing. Was the spot dangerous? Too much? Yes, it was. She was about 2 inches away from breaking her neck. Period. However, the only person accountable for what happened is Kimberly. And that's the big thing about this, right? Is it wouldn't have gone viral. Dickinson wouldn't have got death threats if he was doing this to Drew Gulak. It's because he was doing it to a woman that there's so much of a kerfuffle.
I just want to, like, I'm not calling shenanigans or anything on Lucasto's, like, piece, because she's respectful in this in saying that, like, ultimately, it's the wrestler themselves who consent to this. It's on the wrestler. If the move is safe, it's up to them, and it's on their shoulders, and things go wrong, but, like, they take responsibility for it because they choose, you know, they choose these spots. To me, characterizing that just wholeheartedly as unsafe, the, like, she was about to, like, was the spot dangerous too much? Yes, it was. The spot itself probably wasn't as dangerous as it was because there was some form of, like, misstep there. There was some form of, like, extra momentum. There was some little mistake that caused it to be a little bit more dangerous. And I feel like that is a qualification that is necessary to make. And also, we have covered Lufisto matches on this podcast. We have watched a ton of Lufisto hardcore matches. I feel like Lufisto is not someone necessarily who can call this particular spot unsafe based on some of the things that I've seen her very much consent to doing in the ring.
Yeah, I mean, and that same vein, like, I'm hesitant to cast any kind of judgment on it because I've jumped off balconies. I've thrown people through tables. Like, I've done all that crazy stuff. And, you know, it's all on me and my opponent and whoever else is involved in it. Like, we agree on it. And our goals are always, how do we do this in the safest way? But also, like, as a young wrestler, for better or for worse, you are highly rewarded for these risky things, and you're rewarded when a spot goes viral, for better or for worse. You know, the stuff I did earlier in my career, like, there were huge benefits to it. You know, after, like, for example, like, jumping off the balcony during the 24-hour show, like, that got me on Joey Janela's Spring Break. There's a connection there, and it's hard, and it's hard to give advice to young wrestlers what to do in that situation, but that's just kind of the reality of being a wrestler.
Yeah. I mean, I think you know firsthand from, you know, seeing things happen, having things happen, like any spot can be dangerous, right? Like anything you do in that ring can be dangerous. If there is a mistake made, if there is a problem of timing, if there's anything that goes wrong, any tiny thing, even a fundamental wrestling move can hurt somebody. So, like, how do we even begin to characterize something as inherently dangerous, aside from, you know, like live fire or like lots and lots of light tubes? Like, some things like this have the capacity to be dangerous or to be fairly safe in the realm of wrestling. But then again, so does any move in wrestling.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of injuries happen on like the dumbest things, you know, slipping on a floor or something like that. But, you know, I think like when there's a spot that's really big like this, you work extra hard to make sure it's safe. You know, like those moments that I was talking about, like there was a lot of thought that went into making it as safe as possible and to like figure out, you know, all the potential things that could have happened. And there's tons of things that ideas that I had that we workshopped and realized like, you know, this isn't the safest thing we can do. I mean, it happened last night when I was at Enjoy Wrestling. We had something planned and, you know, as we saw how slippery the floor was, like there's a new floor at Mr. Small's Theater and we realized it's, you know, it's a marble floor, so it's slippery. And we decided we can't do that because there's just a risk now. And we called an audible right before we went to the ring.
As I said, Kimber was already being treated like a big deal going into this match. I mean, that's why she got this babyface moment of coming out at the end of the show and confronting the heel stable and standing up to them. And coming out of this one, she continues to be a top star and beyond. She gets matches against people like Chris Hero, Keith Lee, MJF, like the top names of the business then and still today. While she's making her name in Beyond in 2013, 2014, she also debuts for Wrestling is Fun, Chikara's sister promotion, before finally debuting for Chikara proper in 2014. So just like WSU, just like Beyond, she and most of these promotions, she arrives as part of a tournament. In this case, it's the King of Trios 2014. She joins Night Eye for the Pirate Guy. The team is Jolly Roger and Lance Steele. Those are her partners.
We'll hear about Lance Steele a little later.
And because she's teaming with Lance Steele and Jolly Roger, she takes on the name Princess Kimberly. That's where the princess comes from. Unfortunately, they lose in the first round of the King of Trios. So success does not come instantly. But she's here and she's making her name known. She enters the Young Lions Cup that November. She doesn't win, but she continues to build her name Chikara. And that comes to 2015. The Challenge of the Immortals. Season 15 of Chikara will feature a 9-month-long double round-robin tournament called the Challenge of the Immortals. 10 teams. Each team has a captain who has to choose the members of their team. And to the surprise of a lot of people, young rookie Princess Kimberly is named a team captain. She kind of ends up, because she's not a well-established name, because she's still getting her bearings, she gets stuck with kind of the misfits, the last picked for dodgeballs. She pairs up with Los Ice Creams and the time-displaced Jervis Convelli. I'm sorry, if you don't follow Chikara, we don't have time to get into all of this.
Yeah, I don't even know about the time displacement of Jervis Convelli, but...
We don't have time for all this. That's a whole other podcast.
So yeah, this Challenge of the Mortals, this is kind of, as I was talking about before, like there was a whole angle where Chikara, the company, shut down. And it was this very like complicated story, but it involved like the company ending, you know, it was taken over by the T-Tour conglomerate, blah, 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 blah. They can't run anymore. So the Challenge of the Mortals was kind of a response to that, where there's this very complicated story that had real life implications, and then the Challenge of the Immortals was kind of the exact opposite. It was just like the bare bones, like it's a wrestling tournament. It is as basic wrestling as you can get. So this is how Shakar is kind of coming out of that era of the shutdown.
So the team is Crown and Court, Kimberly, Jervis Cottonbelly, and Los Ice Creams. Nobody has them pegged to go very far in the tournament, and for the first couple of months, that sounds about right. They go months into this tournament without a win. They just lose and they lose, but in each loss, they come together tighter as a team, tighter as friends, and they start to gel as a group. Finally, a couple months into the tournament, they manage to pick up their first win. Then they get two more upset wins in a row. And by the time the tournament finishes, 9 months later, they're actually in third place overall for points. But Dasher Hatfield has discovered that some of his team's wins were tainted due to his teammates cheating behind his back. So Dasher forfeits their team's entire points, which places Crown and Court now officially in second place in the finals. December 5th, 2015, Chikara, the show is Top Banana, is the season finale. In the penultimate match on the card, the finals of the Challenge of the Immortals, Crown and Court defeat the Wrecking Crew to win the tournament. Because of this, Kimber, Jervis, and Los Ice Creams are each presented with a golden opportunity. This is three golden point tokens that they can use to challenge for any Chikara championship in the future. That's the penultimate match on the card. The main event of the night is Hallowicked, Eddie Kingston, and Icarus in a three-way dance for the Chikara Grand Championship. 24 minutes of action, Hallowicked retains his title, but as the referees check on him, Kimber's music hits. Edie, you said you were in the building for this one?
I was. It was only my second ever Chikara show, and I didn't really follow the promotion all that much, so I was just kind of going by what I saw in the audience, but yeah, it was incredible. It was just, the timing was really perfect because it felt like, you know, it felt like a very final, like it felt like the end of the show. It felt like we were like starting to pick up your jackets and head for the door, and then her music hit, and you know, it very much in vain of like Money in the Bank. It just like, you know what's happening. There's a huge, like the vibe is in the arena of what's about to happen.
Kimber hits the ring, she cashes in her golden opportunity, and in 2 minutes and 58 seconds, she makes Hallowicked tap out to the Chikara special. With this win, she becomes only the fourth Chikara Grand Champion in history, and the first woman to hold the top traditionally male championship in any major promotion. Kimber says, even though it was 3 minutes, it felt like I was in the ring for hours. It was such an amazing experience. I don't even know if I realized what was happening until it happened. Hearing the fans cheer, there were some people who just started crying in the front row. It was overwhelming and humbling. I never thought I'd be able to affect people that way.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I felt all that. And like, that was only, like I said, my second ever Chikara experience. And it felt like this huge emotional, I had this huge emotional investment in it. I was shocked when I was reading through the notes of the show. I'm shocked that it only was 2 minutes, because it felt much longer than that, because there was even like interference with, you know, the rest of like Frightmare came to the ring, and I think the Batiri or someone else, and the Los Ice Cream sent them to the back. So there's all this, you know, all this stuff happening. But it was such a tense couple of minutes with such a huge payoff. And it was so cathartic, and it was incredible. And like I said, at the top of the show, it was just, I really learned like the power of wrestling and the power of independent wrestling and the power of storytelling. You know, I always come back to that moment and that match.
So season 15 and the year 2015, and with Princess Kimberly as the Chikara Grand Champion, she goes into 2016. It'll end up being the most prolific year of her career. She defends the Chikara Championship against people like Tegan Knox, against Drew Gulak, of course. No matter where she goes, she always ends up fighting Drew. And against another trailblazer in Chikara, the first woman to win the Young Lions Cup, the future Ruby Soho. Next match on our playlist, Chikara, The Secret of the Ooze, March 2016. Princess Kimberly defends the Chikara Grand Championship against Heidi Lovelace.
I love this match. I don't really have like that much intelligent things to say. I will say, I will compare the intro of this match to the match we will talk about in a little bit. But I think this match does a really nice job of trying to establish this tension right off the bat. So even if you haven't been following a storyline between these two wrestlers, like if you're just watching this match, you get everything that's happening like right off the bat with that like very tense, like offered handshake and like Heidi just like refusing it and kicking at it and like them immediately going into the match. This one is doesn't stop. Both women are like clearly like coming into their powers like very, very quickly as wrestlers. And it's just a showcase of that. It's fantastic.
Yeah, I love this one too. You know, when we talk about storytelling as a wrestler and storytelling in the ring, like this is exactly the type of match we're talking about. There's a lot of layers of storyline, but they're very, very simple. Like the basic is like, they are friends. They are friends before the bell rings. They will be friends after the match. But in between bells, they are going to do whatever they can. Especially Heidi is going to do whatever she can to win the title. And the friendship goes out the window. The handshake goes out the window. And there's little bits of like her making comments or her saying something to Kim. And this only works in a small independent wrestling venue, like that venue in North Carolina, where you can hear it and the camera's right there. There's only a few of those little moments. And then there's a couple moments later on where maybe Heidi is getting a little too aggressive, a little too desperate, and she misses a meteora and hurts her knee, and the champion is able to take advantage of that. So there's another layer of story there. And then on top of that, just excellent wrestling. And that's what makes this such a classic match, is just a little bit of story with great wrestling, and you have so much to come back to and so much to – everything has consequence now. All the moves have consequence because there's a story and the stakes are raised. So this is really special and a great match for like young wrestlers to study, or, you know, I always come back to this one too. So, yeah, I love this one. I'm glad you put this on the playlist.
Yeah, this is the type of match that you feel as much as you understand. Like, you feel it as much as you watch it. Like, you can watch this match and appreciate all of the, like, good wrestling that's happening here. But like you so well put, Edie, like, the storytelling is what makes this match feel more intense, feel more impactful, feel more of the moment that it is. That lovely bit of story between these two wrestlers of, like, Kimber having the bit of veteran advantage there and just being able to capitalize on a little bit of the just tiny mistakes that Heidi makes from being just a little bit more green, like, that is showcased so well, not telegraphed in an overt way, but understood. And it makes this one of those matches where like it sticks with you as much of a feeling as a like wrestling match.
They go something like 17 minutes before we get the first pinfall attempt. That's a little thing that I love. Like they're just fighting and fighting around the ring in and out of the ring, and nobody's trying to get a pin. Nobody's trying, because the idea is like, oh, we know each other well enough to know like, I'm not winning the match yet. I need to deliver some more.
That's really interesting. I didn't really pick up on that. And that's something that like is so drilled into me when I'm like making a match, especially during like the middle section where, you know, the hero is in peril, is like you want those pins because it shows that your goal is to win the match. So to withhold those for a while, that's really interesting. It makes me think of like No Country for Old Men, where they don't have a soundtrack and you don't notice it, but that gives it something a little special, something a little different. So I bet that was a very, very intentional choice to have it have this very different feeling.
Yeah, almost that idea of like, I can't really go for it until I know I have that, like that, until I have an opportunity that I know can work. Because I know this person, because I know this wrestler, because I understand this wrestler, I will not make that attempt unless I'm sure I can pull it off.
Yeah. And I think that goes into the finish, too, where Kim goes up. She does her normal power bomb, which is usually followed by the alligator clutch, which we should talk about, too. But instead of going for that pin, she wants to win with a submission because it feels a little bit more finite. It feels more final, and it puts a real pin in that match. Or no pun intended, not a pin of a exclamation point or a period on it.
And we should say, so Kimber hits, what am I going to say, six German suplexes in a row. Then there's a little bit of waist lock exchange, then she hits a seventh, and then the locker room empties. And everybody from the locker room comes out, they surround the ring, and they place their hands on the apron as like a real sign of respect, like this is a big time match, and we want to be here to witness this in person ourselves.
And that was something, you know, again, like in Chikara, like wrestlers were not allowed to leave the locker room. We weren't allowed, not that we weren't allowed, but to, you know, we were supposed to stay out of sight just because it added to the mystique of what was happening into the ring. And so when you saw the Chikara locker room out there at the ring, it was a very special moment. So that was always a way to like really highlight those special matches, was to have the locker room empty.
Well, to date, this is her highest rated match on Cage Match, for whatever that's worth. Kimber holds the Chikara Championship for 6 months before losing it back to Halla Wicked, and she will go down in history as the only woman to hold that title. Post-title in Chikara 2016, she enters the King of Trios tournament with Oleg the Usurper and the Estonian Thunder Frog. They beat Team Cruiserweight Classic, which is Drew Gulak, Cedric Alexander, and Johnny Gargano. And they defeat the original Divas Revolution, which is Mickie James, Jazz, and Victoria, before losing to Team Sendai Girls. So two big victories for Kimber's team over six WWE superstars. But unfortunately, those wins will be the only real success she ever has against WWE superstars. December 2016... it's NXT. We are into the NXT era of American wrestling now. The quote-unquote women's revolution has arrived in WWE. NXT is the hottest it's ever been. We have newcomer Ember Moon, the former Athena, getting a big push on NXT. And her enhancement talent of the week is Kimber Lee. Ember Moon beats her in 3 minutes. It's an enhancement match. Kimber's just there to make Ember look good. But a couple weeks later, NXT signs Kimber Lee, Heidi Lovelace, and Dakota Kai on the same day. Kimber spends the first 4 months in NXT wrestling on house shows under her birth name of Kimberly Frankelli. It's not until April, another 4 months later, that she makes TV again. This time, she's doing the job for the newly named Ruby Soho. This time, she loses to Ruby in 2 minutes and 19 seconds. Another month passes, she makes it TV again as part of number one contender Battle Royal, but she's eliminated early by Ruby. And it's back to the house shows. She's just kicking around house shows, she's not really doing anything important. Ruby and Dakota, who were signed the same day as her, are getting big pushes on TV now, they're getting featured regularly. Kimber is still on house shows. It takes 7 months of her being signed before they finally give her a WWE name. Her WWE name is Abby Laith. Edie, what would be your NXT name?
Oh gosh, I don't know.
It has to be something really The first name is usually I was gonna say first name is usually normal. That's not true.
You put me on the spot. I don't have a good one. I would fight for Edith Surreal.
Yeah, it's not happening. We're gonna call you Ellen Tarnas.
Not Ellen.
Or something like that. Ellen Stetson. No, that's still too normal. The last name has to be something like a couple extra consonants for some reason.
I mean, if it's the NXT thing of like, we're going to take the name you have now and just like change the, like give you the thesaurus, the almost version, the uncanny valley version, then like, I don't know, Eve Surreal could be like Serena Bazaar.
Not Serena Bazaar.
Write it down, folks. Make a note for when it happens.
Okay, at least it's not.
So 7 months after signing with NXT, she finally has a new name. It's Abby Laith. I could not find any information as to where this came from, what this means. It's just a name. Abby makes her TV debut as part of the first Mae Young Classic. She picks up wins over Alpha Female and Rachel Ellering, including pinning Rachel with the Alligator Clutch. Edie, tell us about the Alligator Clutch.
Yes, I was really happy that they made that a part of her story in WWE. They don't do a lot of stuff with moves that I can think of like that. So I thought that was a really interesting way to introduce her character, introduce the moveset. It's a pin. It's a inescapable pin. If it's put on properly, it's a total shoot. You cannot escape it. And that was just a staple of Kim's offense. And yeah, I'm just really glad that that got to stay with her character when she went up to WWE, because, you know, I know like she lost a lot of things that made her special during that NXT run.
Yeah, in the Mae Young Classic, Abby Leith looks great. Like I said, pins Alpha Female, pins Rachel Ellering with the Alligator Clutch. She loses in the quarterfinals, but she loses to Mercedes Martinez. And nobody can ever, like, nobody ever loses anything by losing to Mercedes Martinez. She's one of the greatest of our generation.
Yeah, during that whole tournament, it looks like they're really behind her. It looks like NXT is really trying to build her up to have a lot of momentum coming out of this tournament with, you know, obviously two wins. It looks like everything is all set for her. Like, the table is set for her run now.
So a month after the Mae Young Classic finishes, Kimber is back on NXT TV for another battle royal. It's whatever. This time she gets eliminated by Nikki Cross. And then it's back to the house show circuit, doing the Florida loop, the coconut loop, as they call it. And then March 2018, WWE releases Kimberly, Sage Beckett, and a handful of other people all on the same day. She'd been under contract for 15 months, but only made it to NXT television 4 times. 2 battle royals and 2 enhancement losses. They didn't even give her 1 enhancement win over, you know, a newly unknown person. And they don't even give her a good reason for the release. They don't tell her it's because of this or that, or she needs to work on this, or attitude issues. All they say is, yeah, just keep working hard.
Yeah, that's the hard thing about wrestling, is you don't know. You don't know why it doesn't work out in certain places or with certain people. You know, talking to her and kind of hearing what other people say, it just felt like the things that she felt made her special, she was asked not to do, whether that was like the barrage of German suplexes or working a harder style or whatever it is. I don't know. But I think that's hard. I couldn't do that. You know, like, I've built so much into what makes Edith Sorrell a special character and a special wrestler. If I went to WWE and I had to totally reinvent myself, I don't know if I could do that. That feels like a very impossible task to ask someone. But then on the other side, you know, talking to Drew Gulak, one of the most important things that he says about being a wrestler is being adaptable. And you can see that through his career at WWE. You know, he's brought in the Cruiserweight Classic, and he was the technical bruiser, not bruiserweight, but technical brawler style. And then he evolved to have this character with the 205 Live, you know, the anti-flying thing for a better 205 Live. And then he was working with Daniel Bryan, and that didn't work out. And then he did something different. So he was adaptable to everything that they threw at him. So I don't know if Kim just wasn't able to adapt to what was suggested of her, or it could have been any other reason. I don't know. It doesn't make sense to me why it didn't work out. Because, like I said, it looked like everything during the Mae Young Classic was going her way, and she had all the tools to be very, very successful there. You know, Drew was there at that time, and I'm sure he was involved with the Performance Center. I know the Performance Center, the curriculum there is very similar to what was happening at Chikara and the Wrestle Factory. So Kim was already very familiar with that system. Sarah Del Rey was there, who was a Chikara trainer, and then, you know, one of the assistant coaches down there. So
it's really mystifying. It really is. Like, especially given the wins with the Mae Young Classic, especially given like the kind of uniqueness and anyone who'd be watching NXT who had any like following on the indies would probably have known her name at that point. Like, there's just that weird mystery, and this happens with wrestlers from time to time. We saw it happen to a slew of women.
Deonna Purrazzo, Mercedes Martinez, you know, NXT failed them too, so.
Exactly. It's like they take these wrestlers who have something really special to offer, and then they miss what makes them special. And I'm not putting the blame on any one person. It's just the kind of weird chemistry that happens where some experiments fail, and it's like, that's just not the place for them. They couldn't be the wrestlers that they are in that particular venue.
A couple weeks after her release, she's back in the indies. They told her to keep working hard, and she took it to heart. Beyond Wrestling, Lit Up, April 2018 is her first show back. She challenges Tracy Williams for the Powerbomb TV Independent Championship. She doesn't win it, but she establishes that Kimberly, that we know and love, is back. Abby Lath is dead. And 5 months later, she gets to go on her first and only tour of Japan. She's invited to Stardom to be a part of their 5-star Grand Prix round robin tournament. That's as big of a middle finger as you can give to WWE. She's in the Red Stars block. She picks up wins over Natsuko Tora, Tam Nakano, and Rachel Ellering, but doesn't add up enough points to make it to the finals. She goes back to Chikara, where she and the Whisper capture the
Campeonatos de Parejas.
Thank you.
It was always a challenge. It was so funny, like, doing promos and no one could pronounce it.
She and the Whisper capture the tag titles in 2018, and she also starts dating TNA wrestler Zachary Wentz. Spring of 2019, Kimber publicly comes out in a statement on social media as being an alcoholic. She admits it's something that she struggled with her whole life, and she knows it's something that she'll continue to struggle with going forward, but she's owning it and she's admitting it. May 2019 is when things start to get interesting and beyond. First, she takes on Chris Statlander in a singles match. Stat picks up the win. Then, a couple weeks later, Statlander defeats Orange Cassidy to capture the IWTV Independent Wrestling Championship. Then, a couple weeks after that, we get Chris versus Orange versus Kimber in a 3-way no DQ match for the IWTV title. In that one, Orange Cassidy ends up recapturing the gold. So the payoff to this is July 28th, Americanarana, Kimberly, Chris Statlander, inside of a steel cage.
Okay, so this was right. Okay, this was right in my like second year of like really devoted wrestling fandom. And when I got into Beyond at this period, I got really into Beyond. Like if you listened to our show in 2019, and if you listened to Grit and Glitter in like our first like several episodes, I'm probably mostly talking about Beyond at that point. And this match was one of my favorites of the year. And it was so fun to revisit it because one of the things I realized is that this is a shockingly short cage match. For an event that, like, I don't believe they had any other cage matches running. They set it up just for this one, and it's a fairly short match for a cage match and does not stop. We mentioned in the Heidi and Kimberly match, there's a bit of, like, an easing into it. There's a feeling each other out. There's the, like, there's a storytelling in that sense. The story in this match is these two fighters are ready to fight and to draw blood as quickly as possible. Kimber short of runs to the cage to begin this match. And the second she is inside of it, the match has started. There's almost immediate, like, against the cage work that happens. There's blood within, I don't know, like a minute and a half. There's moves off the ropes that are like within like 2 or 3 minutes. It's one of those matches that like, you don't even really notice when it escalates because it started at a 10. And there's not, as far as I can remember, and I just watched the match, so I hope I have a good memory. I don't believe there's any other weapons or anything else involved. It's just a cage match where the cage is the weapon, the cage is the venue, the cage is everything, and they use it so well.
Yeah, I mean, I think when you're having a match that's just based on the intensity, like this match was, you can't carry that on for too long. And I think that's a really cool choice to make it feel a little shorter because then you're just going 100% that whole time. And it feels a little different because you see a cage match. As wrestling fans, you're trained to say like, oh, we're going to be here for a long time. And, you know, we've all seen 100 cage matches that kind of draw on for a while. And to have something mm-hmm. that feels a little more intense and has more of a abrupt ending as far as timing is concerned, it makes it, you know, feel special and feel different.
This film really too, like, this match kind of felt like a passing of the torch in a way for Chris, because this was during Chris's like second year, I think. Like, she started really coming in the up and up in like 2018, and 2019 became this like year where she was just having all of these great matches in the indies and getting noticed for all kinds of like really great matches, from more straightforward work to more hardcore styles. And this was among many of the many matches that made her stand out in that year. And for it to be against Kimberly and for them to have this great rivalry, it feels meaningful in the same way that the Kimberly and Heidi match felt meaningful. Like, there is this acknowledgement of it within that feud that there is some like elder statesman, like there's a little bit of veteran advantage that Kimberly has, and Chris is like equally pissed at like having lost her title because of Kimberly's involvement, and also because, you know, Kimberly's a veteran and Chris has something to prove as a still like green newbie.
Yeah, I think those types of matches are really important for like a younger wrestler to be paired with a veteran like Kim. And you saw what like Chris's run during that time was, a lot of intergender matches and a lot of like hardcore with big spots. So, you know, they had a very similar trajectory throughout Beyond at that time.
A month after the steel cage match, Kimber and Zachary Wentz get engaged. And then in Chikara, a group forms called the Crucible. As far as I can tell, here's what happens. Mike Quackenbush goes to Ophidian. Ophidian's one of the head trainers at the Chikara school, and says, we need to prepare this generation of students in case another villainous faction tries to invade like it has in the past. But Ophidian takes the idea a little bit too far. He ends up forming this group, which is almost like an after-hours fight club. They call it the Crucible. And the group includes the Whisper, who has been blackmailing Princess Kimberly for years because he accuses her of using his brother, Lance Steele, as a stepping stone earlier in her career. So in order for her to make amends, Ophidian makes her team with him and Lance Steele in the King of Trios tournament, which they end up winning.
Wow, I mean, I was there for all of this, and I don't have a good a grasp as you do on that. But I remember the folks in the Crucible, it was very, they took it very seriously. Like, the Fight Club element of it, like, we weren't allowed to be at the Wrestle Factory when they were doing those. I remember one time I was meeting people there to travel to a different show, and, like, I was just, you know, we met at the Wrestle Factory a lot of times to travel and park our cars and kind of carpool from there. And I did that there, and it was very, like, I walked in and I was, you know, asked to leave because they were filming their Crucible stuff, and I couldn't be involved in that. So it was something that was taken very seriously. And, you know, at that time, Chikara kind of had a reputation for being a little more comedic and lucha based. And this was a direction to push us a little more intense, a little more fighty, something to kind of match what was happening on the rest of the independents and later in like WWE, where they may have borrowed a little bit of that Fight Club Crucible element for the Raw Underground bits.
So Kimber is an unwilling member of the Crucible. She's basically only with them because she's being blackmailed, because she's trying to make amends to Lance Steele. And she's still a member of the Crucible when Chikara closes in the summer of 2020. But before we get there, it's late 2019. Kimber has also returned to Shimmer post-WWE. She picks up wins over Charlie Morgan, another win over Nevaeh, her old friend, and Soraya Sr. November 2019, Shimmer Volume 116. It's a four-way elimination match for the Shimmer Championship. Nicole Savoy defends against Kimberly, Shotzi Blackheart, and the future Gigi Dolin. Priscilla Kelly, the future Dolin, is eliminated early by Savoy. Then Savoy is eliminated by Shotzi. And in the end, Kimber pins Shotzi to become the 10th Shimmer champion. Kimber has finally captured the singles gold that eluded her for so long. She holds the Shimmer title for almost 2 years, setting the record for the longest single reign. But unfortunately, that reign is during the COVID pandemic. So she also has one of the lowest number of defenses at only 3. And as we all know, we reached this part in the story where the COVID pandemic hits. February 2020, At the time, Kimber is actually already thinking of wrapping up her wrestling career. She's been doing this for 9 years. She's wrestled everywhere there is to wrestle. She's done Japan, she's done WWE, she's done the Indies. She's won the Shimmer title, the Chikara title. She's thinking that maybe it's time that I start transitioning into a different phase of my life. What else more is there to do? But before she can retire, she gets a phone call from Impact Wrestling. Impact is one of the few promotions that is still running during the pandemic, still taping things with precautions and no fans in the crowd, things like that. So May of 2020, her and Zachary Wentz get married, and she debuts for Impact Wrestling. From the start, Kimber is a heel in Impact. She steals her first victory over Jessica Havoc by punching her out with brass knuckles behind the referee's back. And August 2020, she officially signs with Impact after 3 months of wrestling for them. Her first move is to form a partnership with the Knockouts champion, Deonna Purrazzo. She becomes sort of Deonna's sidekick. Yeah, I hesitate to say like apprentice because I want to say like Kimber is more established. Like Kimber's been wrestling longer than Deonna has. But she is the sidekick to Knockouts champion, Deonna. The focus is on Deonna and Kimber's there to assist her. Their little group becomes a trio when the former Sue Young reappears one day as straight-laced businesswoman Susan. So now it's Kimber and Deonna and sort of their like lawyer type Susan. Kimber and Deonna enter the tournament to crown new Knockouts tag champions, but they lose in the first round. And 2020 ends with two notable things. One, her husband signs with WWE and is assigned to NXT. Two, Kimber ranks at number 15 on the PWI Women's 100, which is the highest ranking of her career. Interesting, because this was the year when she almost retired.
Yeah, post, you know, her post-WB run, she just put her head down and got to work and did incredible stuff. So it was well-deserved to be that highly ranked, and she didn't give up, and it was a great run during that time.
Early 2021, she's wrestling regularly for Impact. She's doing singles matches. She's taking with Susan. But they don't personally really have like a lot going on in terms of story. They're still just second fiddles to the Deonna show. This continues until June 2021, when Deonna turns on them, fires them from her side, says they don't deserve to be with her. And out of frustration, Kimber takes Susan to Father James Mitchell and says, "Something needs to change. I need Sue Young back." So Father James Mitchell opens a portal to the Undead Realm. Again, folks, we don't have time to get into all this. don't ask me to explain the Undead Realm, Susan, Sue Young, Susie. That's a whole other podcast as well. Suffice to say, James Mitchell opens a portal. Susan drags Kimber through with her. Sue Young returns, and Kimberly is now an undead bridesmaid.
Hell yeah.
A little while later, they convert Brandi Lauren and Susie. Sue Young, I'm sorry, Sue. Sue Young has new undead bridesmaids, Kimberly and Brandi Lauren. So now Kimber and Brandi are wrestling teams like Decay and the Iconics, and things seem to be on the up for them, but Sue Young becomes pregnant. This is not an Undead Realm storyline thing. This is real life. The real life Sue Young, she gets pregnant, and so Impact releases both Kimber and Brandi, because I guess they were only there to be support for Sue Young, and if Sue Young's not going to be around, then we don't need you. We always praise Impact on this podcast, so this was kind of like heartbreaking to see and hear happen in real time, that like, really, you couldn't find anything else for Kimber and Brandi? Like, Susan, if Sue Young's not around, then you don't need them?
Okay, so this is even more of a head-scratcher to me than WWE, because WWE failing to see what makes a wrestler like inherently special and like work with those traits and like bring them into their brand rather than forcing that wrestler to kind of adhere to their brand. Like that's nothing new, but Impact is so much character work, and Kimber had been working so much in the indies with the character focused indie, like the independent promotion known for its like in-depth storytelling and its like high concept gimmicks and its like multiple worlds and lots of like convoluted and intricate and interesting and engaging and off the wall plots. If anyone could have navigated the various realms of Impact, it could have been Kimber. that this is even much more confusing to me than the WWE stuff.
So post-Impact, Kimber goes back to the Indies, as she is wont to do. She returns to Shine, where her and Stormy Lee capture the Shine Tag titles before losing them to the Hex. And she goes back to Shimmer, because she is still the Shimmer champion through all of this. And the pandemic has lessened up, shows are running again. It's October 31st, 2021, Shimmer Volume 120. Nobody knows it at the time, but this will end up being the final event ever for the legendary Shimmer women athletes. And in the main event of the final Shimmer show ever, Kimber Lee loses the Shimmer championship to Zoe Sky. 4 months later, Kimber wrestles what will end up being her final Beyond match when she takes on Billy Starks.
This was a great match. I think, as we were talking about earlier, about like kind of passing the torch and working with a veteran as like a greener wrestler. I don't want to say green to Billy, but like a younger wrestler like Billy Starks, you could really see that veteran hand in that match. So this is one of the matches I definitely watch preparing for this, because it's really, really good and definitely worth watching. And, you know, I think a great like stepping stone on Billy's career to where she's at today.
March 30th, 2022, Kimber's husband files for divorce. In response, she tweets out two photos of him, at the same time accusing him of domestic violence. One of the photos shows him dressed in a Hitler costume for Halloween. As a result of the photo, he's released from WWE, though WWE sources go on the record and say that they consider her domestic violence claims to be unreliable. Over the summer, Kimber really starts to wind things down. She wrestles for Shine again, where she challenges Eva Lise for the Shine Championship, but fails to capture it. And as I said, going into the pandemic, at the start of 2020, she had already been thinking about retirement or moving on to a different phase of her life. Now it's 2 years later. She's done WWE. She's done Impact. She's wrestled in Japan. Her home promotions, Shimmer's closed up. Chikara's closed up. So it really seems like things are sort of, the Kimberly chapter of independent wrestling is starting to come to a close. October 29th, 2022, for Fest Wrestling out of Gainesville, Florida, it is We Are Family 5. And in her final match as Kimberly, it is Kimberly versus Edith Surreal.
Yeah, so obviously a very special match for me. Yeah, Kim was in the area and did one Fest show before that. And then I was messaging Tony and like really pushing for this match. You know, some people call that politicking, but no, I wanted that match. And he was like, oh, I would have never thought to put you two together. And I was just like, no, it would be great. Also, definitely, like, trust me. Yeah, it was really awesome, obviously, very special. I'd got to know Kim fairly well during this time. You know, I was driving to and from Philadelphia to Beyond and, you know, doing, you know, chauffeuring Philadelphia-based wrestlers up there, and then, you know, knew her through Chikara doing airport runs and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, I got to kind of share what that, the moment of her winning the Grand Championship, what that meant to me. So she wore a little tiara for that match. So I like to think that I wrestled Princess Kimberly in that last match. Yeah, it was really awesome. And she taught me a ton. I learned a ton wrestling with her. And it was really cool. And I'm really glad I got, you know, to check one person off my, my like wrestling goals list, my dream opponents list. So it was amazing.
Yeah, outside of, I think, one Battle Royal in Chikara, this is the only time you ever shared a ring.
Yeah, we were in the Infinite Gauntlet one time, and yeah, this was the only time.
Did you know at the time, did she know at the time that Kimberly was coming to an end, that she was going to be stepping away from wrestling?
No, I didn't. I had no idea, because, you know, wrestling, it kind of ebbs and flows. You know, sometimes you're doing a lot of stuff. Sometimes you're taking it easy, as, you know, I've done in my career as well. So I had no idea.
If the final match is Kimberly that October at Fest Wrestling. 2 months later, she does wrestle one more match. It is in Columbus, Ohio for the Fantasy Super Cosplay Wrestling GalaxyCon. So this is a cosplay wrestling anime comic book convention. and they do matches where wrestlers dress up as pop culture characters. So you get people like Speedball Mike Bailey and Leva Bates dressing up as comic book and anime and superhero characters and wrestling matches at this convention.
Yeah, we do. We do a lot of weird stuff like that as wrestlers. It's come up a handful of times in my career. Yeah, I mean, it's fun to do something different and to kind of like get out of the routine of your normal character. And, you know, you're not really wrestling for in front of like traditional wrestling fans. So sometimes that's really, really fun because they're going to like react to things that maybe a regular wrestling crowd wouldn't. You know, maybe it's passe to do in front of the traditional crowd, but in front of like a non-wrestling fan crowd, they're going to go crazy for it.
Yeah, and it might shock some people to know that like many wrestlers are like big geeks and love to like occasionally inhabit like characters that they enjoy from various forms of media. And yeah, makes total sense.
Can I share one story where I did a comic book wrestling?
Yes, I was going to ask, oh, if you God, got booked please. To do this, who would you play?
Oh my gosh. So I did this one time. It was up in, I think I told you the story before, but it was like 2 hours north of Toronto for like a very small town, like comic book convention. And I wrestled Spider-Man. It was just some like local wrestling student who was dressed up as Spider-Man. But they were like, it was like Spider-Man onesie kind of thing, not like a really great Spider-Man suit. And the headliner of this whole comic book event was the General Lee, like the General Lee car from the Dukes of Hazzard. And it was parked next to the ring. And as we're wrestling, the thing with the General Lee is there's like the car horn, the do 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 do. So as we're like doing our little match, like someone beeps the horn and it's right by the ring and startles us. And we totally flub the spot, totally mess up the match. And it's just, what an iconic moment in my career to be have a match ruined against Spider-Man by the General Lee.
Wow. Yeah, you can't top that. Unless you go back and wrestle a show as the girl from the Dukes of Hazzard in the little the little jean shorts.
All right, next time comic book wrestling comes calling, I'll pitch that.
So for Kimber, it's December 2022, the fantasy super cosplay Wrestling Galaxy Con in Columbus. She wrestles two matches dressed as Sylvie, the female variant of Loki from the Marvel Disney Plus series Loki. One of the matches is a three-way, the other is a five-way. Her opponents include Savannah Evans as Archer character Lana Kane, and Veda Scott as Marvel What If character Captain Carter. These are her final matches before announcing her retirement 5 months later. May 6, 2023, Kimber puts out a statement through social media. At times, wrestling was the greatest thing that ever happened to me. I've been to places, I've gone to see things I never would have dreamed of in my lifetime. But at the same time, there comes a point in everyone's life where things just cannot continue in the same fashion that they have, because circumstances and goals evolve and change. I originally thought that this was just going to be a break from wrestling, that after some time I'd be ready to put my heart into this again and come back better than I ever have before. But the thing is, the more I think about it, the more I come to realize that my heart is not in this anymore. Kimber Lee brings me instant heartache and anxiety, not the butterflies and joy that once was. There are too many painful wounds that come with going back into this world, and I'm not willing to give those wounds my power or dominion over my life anymore. Because the other thing missing from this, total transparency here, listeners. I didn't really know how to talk about the stuff with her ex-husband. I didn't want to just ignore it and pretend it never happened because it is a big thing. You Google her name, it's one of the first things that comes up. But I didn't want to get really into the weeds about it either because to some extent it's none of our business. But it is worth noting that social media being what social media is, she has just been tormented with hate mail and venom from mostly male wrestling fans ever since the divorce went through with her ex-husband. You go on any cage match listing of her, any sort of Reddit or anywhere else, and anytime her name comes up, people are just insulting her and tearing her down and trashing her. And reading this retirement statement from her, you have to think that was a big factor in her stepping away from wrestling as well.
I think it also goes into her post-WWE time. I was very taken aback. Some of the things that were said to her and posted on her social media after her run, you know, like that's a kind of a low point in her career. And to see how many hateful comments are directed at her, it's hard because a lot of stuff is so unavoidable because we have to use social media for our careers and for our business. And you can't block all those comments. You can't hide from them. And I always felt like social media was especially cruel to her during her career. And, you know, especially at, you know, this point we're talking about now.
So Kimber officially retires publicly May 6th, 2023. 5 days later, 5 p.m. in the afternoon, a police officer in Florida observes her car facing the wrong direction on a roadway, stopping traffic at a green light. He signals for her to pull over, but has to follow her to a shopping center before she finally stops. She's arrested and charged with DUI, resisting an officer with violence, and battery on a law enforcement officer. She pleads not guilty. June 2023, she returns to the FSCW GalaxyCon Columbus and wrestles two more matches. Like the previous December, she's again playing Marvel character Sylvie. In the first match, she wrestles Zane Riley, who's playing Harry Potter character Hagrid. And on June 11th, 2023, in the final match of her career to date, she wrestles Sue Young one last time. As of today, there are no indications that she plans to return to wrestling at any time in the future. A pre-trial hearing for last year's arrest is scheduled for April 14th. And per her Instagram, she is currently 9 months sober.
I've always said, like, as long as I have one little girl somewhere, or little boy, I don't care, that says I want to be like Kimberly, if I inspire somebody, then I've really done my job. So it's the best feeling when I see that.
That's our show. Thank you so much for listening with us, folks. My name is Harley. Her name is Em. You can find us on social media at Grit Glitter Pod. You can support us on Patreon, Grit Glitter Pod. $5 a month gets you archive episodes of this podcast. And then we take that money and we give it to promotions like Wrestler's Lab, like Enjoy Wrestling, like Hood Slam. Promotions that we love, we give them money. And then they take that money and they hire, they book people like Edith Surreal. That's like, what more do you want?
You sponsored me a few times. I was very proud to have the little Grit and Glitter logo next to my name on the match cards.
Yeah, maybe it looked a little familiar to you.
Yes, I'm very familiar. I may have corrected Enjoy Wrestling because they forgot to include the little star on the tittle for the eye and made sure they had the right logo. Maybe that happened.
How dare they?
But yeah, thank you. Thank you so much for having me. Kim was like a very special wrestler and very inspiring for me. So this was, you know, really special for me to talk about her career.
Yes. And I don't know. Who should we get to co-host when we do Living Legend, The Life and Career of Edith Surreal?
Oh, well, I mean, I think we need to wait another couple of years to see who is like your acolyte. Edie, like, give it, yeah, you send us a list of like who's trailing you around asking for matches.
Oh, I mean, everybody, right? Everyone wants to wrestle the ephemeral queen.
I was gonna say whoever drove the General Lee.
No. I don't ever see the General Lee again.
Well, speaking of people who want to wrestle you, where can people watch you wrestle?
So I have a couple shows coming up during WrestleMania weekend in my hometown of Philadelphia. On Thursday, April 4th, I'm at Labor of Love, and that's at 1 p.m. against Daniel Maccabi. So that's going to be a crazy grapple fest. I'm very much looking forward to that. And then later that night, I'm at 808 Wrestling at 11 p.m. against one of MV Young's students, Reese Hayes. So both of those should be really fun. And wrestling twice in one day, like, who do I think I am? But beyond that, you can follow me on social media. I'm at Edith Surreal on Instagram and Twitter or X. Oh, and Blue Sky. I've been messing around with Blue Sky. Edith Surreal on Blue Sky, too.